I love that. Thank you. Yeah. So while you're sitting down, before you start zoning out again while I start talking, I would love to hear something that someone heard. So, and I'm going to actually write them up here on the dry erase board. So anything that you heard, maybe it's not yours, maybe it's somebody else's that you didn't ask permission to yell out. But like what came to mind when you guys heard the word Baptist? John. Man, that was a big, that's a heavy hitter. John. Anything else? Southern. Yeah. Anything else? Past? Did you say past? 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 Okay. Yeah. Pats? Hats! Hats! Oh, sure. Yeah. Anything else? Different. Wait, what'd you say over here? Casserole. Yes, yes, absolutely. Especially weirdly crunchy ones. Right? Casserole. Yeah, right? Anybody else? Conservative. Yeah, yeah. Wait, what over here? Church. Okay. Sorry, you're talking over each other, and I love that, actually. Conservative. Let's get one more. One more. Central. Yes! Yeah, from the cheap seats. I love that. Wait, what did you say down here? Church. Okay. Oh, yeah, we got it. We'll do one more. Central. Oh, perfect. Perfect. You know, like, I never know what people are going to say when I say the word Baptist out loud. Maybe you have the same experience. But I can remember when I was at UT, University of Tennessee, and I was taking the psychology of religion taught by Dr. Kathleen Lawler. It's one of my favorite classes of all time. And we were having to do a group project with other students. And our project was the psychology of fundamentalism, which featured several Baptists rather prominently, right? And so I remember sitting in Hodges Library with the rest of my group for this presentation and having to admit to them that I went to a Baptist church in North Knoxville. Right. I'll let your imagination do most of the heavy lifting there with the responses, but I only had one person say, are women allowed to wear pants at your church? Right, which is a win. That's a win for us, right? Yeah. I mean, but no, seriously. Even after I graduated and went with Lindsay to seminary in Los Angeles, we went to a place called Fuller, and it's the most diverse seminary in the world. There are over 50 different denominations, and there are whole degree programs in Korean and Spanish. It's over 60% non-white. And we had church history classes taught by Pentecostal Roman Catholics and Presbyterians and Episcopalians. And on my left was like my friend Isaac from Berkeley, and he was evangelical. And on my right was my friend Ryan, who was a Lutheran from Kansas. And while we were there, we met another woman, our friend Megan, who was another Lutheran from Washington State. And we were talking one day, and she found out that Lindsay and I were Baptists from East Tennessee. And she started snorting. And she said, you know, my dad told me that I could move to Southern California as long as I promised not to come home married to some Baptist. Right? She's moving to Southern California, and the thing her dad is most worried about is her coming home married to a Baptist. Right? Even in L.A., being Baptist is kind of a tough look, guys. Right? Yeah. It's amazing. So every time that, I don't know about you all, but every time I get greeted with one of these like scoffs or eye rolls or kind of just confused stares when my Baptist identity comes up, it can be a little embarrassing. Or I turn on the news or I listen to the radio and inevitably there's some Baptist in there talking about the news. And it can, for some of us, it can become kind of embarrassing. Friends, it took me quitting professional Christianity, largely out of confusion and sometimes disgust with my Baptist identity, to really come to terms with or reckon not just what it means for me to be Baptist, but what it means to be from Central Baptist in Fountain City. Here's what I mean. I can remember when it happened. I was 31, working as an unpaid intern with a wife and a one-year-old at home, really enjoying my life. Yeah. And I was in the counseling office. That was a joke. It was not. It was hard. That was in the counseling office at Maryville College, where I worked as an intern. And I'd been working with a student I'm being told to move to the middle, which makes a lot of sense. I'm just like hiding out over there behind the dry erase board. Thanks, fellas. I appreciate it. And I was working with this student for a long time, and he brought up one day that he had some weird religious baggage, which is the perfect way of putting it. And so this student self-identified as agnostic, and he said he had been forced to go to a Baptist church in his hometown and found it compelling for a while, but ultimately kind of hateful and confusing and anxiety-provoking for him. So he quit, stopped paying much attention. Until, that is, he started studying religion in college and felt drawn to something, even though he couldn't quite put words to it. And in a moment of professional weakness, I leaned in and said, "You know, man, I'm actually an ordained Baptist minister." To which he responded with something I cannot repeat in front of you here at church. And then followed up with, "Can we talk about God in here?" It was in this moment, for maybe the first time in my whole life, that instead of being embarrassed, I was grateful to be Baptist. Because it allowed me this unique perspective and insight into the weird religious baggage that defines so much of spiritual life in the Southeast. Because all of us have it, even if we didn't grow up being afraid of the rapture in early adolescence. Most of us have at some point been hurt, confused, left out, and angry in some way by how our religious traditions have treated us and people we love. Which, in this part of the world, even if it doesn't come out and say it right there on the website, is probably Baptist. This shared experience, friends, offers us an opportunity, if we can push through the embarrassment, to reclaim something that has been lost amidst all the fear, anxiety, and bumper stickers of the last several decades. A way of being Baptist that, I'm going to be honest with you, can blow the doors off the universe if we'll let it. But to talk about that, I need to talk about Acts chapter 17, verse 16. So if you have a Bible or some sort of technological device that you can read it on, I hope you'll read with me. It's a bit lengthy, but we'll get there. So I'll start. "While Paul was waiting for them in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see that the city was full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well as in the marketplace day by day with those who happened to be there. A group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked him, 'What is this babbler trying to say?' Others remarked, 'He seems to be advocating foreign gods.' They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then they took him and brought him to a meeting of the Areopagus, where they said to him, 'May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean.'" Just think about if we did that today. "All the Athenians and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to 24-hour news pundits." Just kidding, that doesn't say that in there. "And listening to the latest ideas," that's what it says. "Paul then stood up in the meeting of the Areopagus and said, 'People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, "To an unknown God." So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship, and this is what I am going to proclaim to you. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth and does not live in temples built by hands, and he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath and everything else. From one man he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring." And I'll stop right there. Now, some of you might be wondering, what, if anything, does this have to do with being Baptist? Because there's not one mention of a crunchy casserole in there in the fellowship hall, right? But hang with me, because Paul's doing something brand new here on so many levels. For starters, he begins his discussion with the Athenians not from a place of condemnation and shame, right? Depicting these polytheistic Greeks as non-religious, but congratulates them instead for their deep faith. He even goes so far as to riff on a Greek poet. You're familiar with him, Epimenides the Cretan. I mean, you know, come on. Who, in a fragment of his own work, Phenomena 5, notes that in his pantheistic, which means God is everywhere, cosmology, we can't help but live and move and have our being in God. Except that Paul turns this whole quote on his head by saying that in their temples and idols and poetry and music and philosophy, instead of being taken aback by the abject lack of religiousness in the Athenians, Paul notes that the deep sacredness they are experiencing from these sources actually emanates not from Mount Olympus, but from the Judeo-Christian God, whose image is most prominently seen in the person of Jesus, his death and resurrection. Secondly, an interesting thing we don't see Paul doing is setting up a church with a franchising model for expansion. We don't see him establish a particular way of communicating what I was taught to call the four spiritual laws, or the Roman road, or the gospel, or the Baptist faith and message 1963 or 2000. Paul simply looks around, sees what's going on, interprets the neighborhood, and then begins with, hey, I see you're very religious. He does this sort of thing over and over again, as we find in most of the mail that makes up the majority of the New Testament, that there is no one Christian church. There are only churches trying to figure things out, some of whom are Jewish, some of whom are Gentile, some of whom are led by women in the first century, some of whom keep women in a separate part of the temple, some of whom are incredibly wealthy and class segregated, and some of whom are made up of slaves and eunuchs and subsistence farmers. Each time Paul speaks to them in Rome or in Corinth or in Ephesus, the only similarity that seems to emerge is that he loves them and wishes for them to love one another and their community in a way that makes sense to Jesus and his resurrection. This, I came to find out much later, is an incredibly Baptist thing of him to do. Because being Baptist, as you'll learn over the next few weeks together, is about paying attention to what our neighborhood believes and thinks and feels when God talk bubbles up, and not what our denominational or religious leaders think and feel and believe. Being Baptist is about putting flesh and blood on what people need and desire from God right now, and not what they needed and desired from God 50 or 100 or 1,000 years ago. It's why in England, several hundred years ago, when some Christians began asking questions about why infants were being baptized into a faith tradition they neither chose nor understood, they began to be persecuted to the point of death. These doubters back then were called Anabaptists, which means to be baptized a second time, because they began encouraging believers in England to think and see for themselves about what Christianity was about. And if they so chose to follow Jesus on their own, that only then would they be baptized for a second time. These Christians also stopped fighting in wars for their king and country, because once they began reading the Bible for themselves, they came to very different conclusions about what Jesus might have meant when he invited his followers to care for the poor and to love their enemies. Some of them even moved to America in search of religious freedom and founded communities that looked completely different than anything they had known in England. As Baptist life began to take root in America, we see communities branch out from these early forerunners, possessing only similarities like loving God, one another, and democratically determining their church trajectories. In this process, church historians began naming these similarities the four fragile freedoms: soul freedom, Bible freedom, religious freedom, and church freedom. Outside of those, these early Baptist communities could be wealthy or working class, liberal or conservative, liturgical or modern. Along the East Coast, we see them develop more Episcopalian and Anglican worshiping traditions, the architecture ornate, the clergy robed, and the congregation decidedly well-heeled. However, once you cross the Mason-Dixon line and the Appalachian Mountains, you will find working-class communities in red brick churches with white columns and white steeples, pulling one another up during the Great Depression, serving one another, watching one another's kids, and developing a theological tradition that reflected the sensible, upwardly mobile, and rugged individualism of a post-World War II East Tennessee. This is the story of Fountain City, generally, and Central Baptist Fountain City, specifically. The only connective tissue between my friend's Episco Baptist Church in Savannah and ours is that our collective bodies are able to be themselves, whether or not they know it, precisely because they are Baptist, which is shorthand for people who believe that God isn't something static, but something in which we live and move and have our being together, uniquely. Historically, when other Christian traditions engaged in discussions about how to be church, you had to be a priest to be in the room. And in those moments, I remember that because I'm Baptist, I come from a tradition where it wasn't seminary-trained reverends teaching me about the way of Jesus. It was my Baptist grandmother, a woman from a tobacco farm in Tazewell who never went to college, teaching me the Lord's Prayer and the books of the Bible and how to interpret the teachings of Jesus and how to snap green beans. In some Baptist churches, she would have been stopped from doing that because of who she was. But here at CBC, someone encouraged that kind of thinking in her, and then she encouraged it in me, and now I get to encourage it in my son. That what you believe only matters if it brings light and life to the world for other people, even if they're polytheistic Athenians, or Jewish, or enslaved, or free, or tobacco farmers from Tazewell. When I remember who we are, instead of being embarrassed, I'm proud to be a Baptist, because we come from a tradition where Martin Luther King Jr.'s Baptist faith upended the civil religion of Jim Crow America. because Jimmy Carter's Baptist faith continues to push his 90-plus-year-old frame up on the scaffolding of Habitat for Humanity houses he's building. Because it inspired my friend John to start a church in Durham for working people, suffering under the weight of medical and student loan debt, so that they can be liberated from financial slavery directly from the church budget. And because it inspired my friend Cal Busman, maybe you know him, to willingly hand a Bible and a dry erase marker to a confused high school student and put him in front of a room of teenagers and tell him to talk about whatever he found interesting about this book. What I mean is that this is a place. We are a part of a tradition where people let a youth minister and a bunch of teenagers start a worship service that you and I are sitting in 20 years later. That happened. What I mean is that this is a place, and we are a part of a tradition when women started asking questions about the Bible, we named them deacons and ordained them and put them behind the pulpit. What I mean is that this is a place, we're a part of a tradition where 15 years ago, I was given keys, probably illegally, to church vans in order to drive loads of students back home to Lonsdale at 9:30 at night on Wednesdays, because we had 250 students from every community, cul-de-sac, condo, and Section 8 housing unit showing up in this gym for a program that was originally started to offer child care for choir members' kids. Just think about that. What I mean is that Central Baptist taught me to ask what's the next right thing for our community without considering how much it might cost, what kind of people might say yes to it, or how it might actually change the church. Because if it brings light and life into the world, it will have been worth it. Today, when I come across a student at Central who's homeless or inadequately clothed or hungry, I don't call social services first. I call Central Baptist. I call you. Because I know that the clothes and the snacks and the gift cards will be at school the next day, not 2 weeks from now. It's what we do, not in spite of our Baptist tradition, but precisely because of it. Frankly, it's only when we stop doing these things, because we are afraid or anxious about the future or worried about believing the right things or letting the wrong people in or putting out the wrong kind of message, that we become embarrassing again. Friends, when we let ourselves be Baptist in the truest sense of the word and stop asking for permission to interpret this book in ways that Fountain City needs us to, in ways that Central High School or Gresham Middle School or Fountain City Elementary need us to, the world gets better for our community, but it also gets better for us. Because that would mean we get to live in a world where churches, like this one specifically, actually do something other than survive until the money runs out. Our community doesn't need another megachurch, or purpose-driven church, or seeker-sensitive church. It needs a real-life Baptist church, one that asks hard questions about the way things work, one that takes the teachings of Jesus seriously enough to question kings and Congress, one that lets women preach sermons and grandmothers interpret the scriptures, one that cares for widows and orphans in their distress, and one that is fundamentally okay with being terribly weird in a landscape demanding partisan sameness and denominational fidelity. Who you vote for and what you believe about things none of us know for sure isn't interesting to the Central Baptist I grew up with, because that church is too busy talking to her neighbors about what they might need to get through the week. She's too busy getting light bills paid off for people and making sure that a world desperately in need of good news doesn't just hear about it in a sermon on Sundays, but sees it, feels it, talks to it, and laughs with it when it gives it a ride to the health department for a checkup. Friends, when I worked in a Presbyterian church for a year, trying to find myself denominationally, I guess, someone asked me there, in the face of yet another embarrassing news story featuring a Baptist pastor, why I was still Baptist. And the first thing that popped into my mind is that I have always wanted to be a part of a religious tradition where ex-cons serve communion, where people in poverty start churches, where women preach sermons, and where everybody gets ordained. I then asked, can that happen at this church? And I remember her saying, no, but are you sure that's what it means to be Baptist? To which the only response is, next slide. Oh, sorry, keep going. Madam, may we quote you on the sign out front? So I'd like to invite the band back up to kind of close this out. And in the process of them playing for us, I'd like to give you the chance to do a bit of reflection. You can get an early start on lunch if you need to, but if you're going to stick around, I'd like you to just consider for a little while what it might mean for you to do what poet laureate Maya Angelou once called, not just a Christian, but to become a practicing Christian. What that might mean for Fountain City, what that might mean for your community or your family or your cul-de-sac or your neighborhood or your kids' schools, what that might mean for all of us, if all of us committed to the process of trying to ask the question, what's the next right thing for Fountain City? Because I guarantee you the interesting answers will start bubbling out of us. And so once the band plays, I'll come back up and do a benediction, but it's been a gift to be with you. Thanks.
Church, would you stand and sing with us?